The United States Court of International Trade is now in session. The Honorable Gary S. Katzmann presiding before court number 22-00257, Cleveland Cliffs, Inc. et al. Versus the United States et al. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiff?
Neil Reynolds for Cleveland Cliffs.
Stephen Vaughn for Cleveland Cliffs.
John Henderson for the U.S. International Trade Commission.
Andrea Kasten, also for the U.S. International Trade Commission.
Mike Jacobson for Defendant Intervenors CFS.
Craig Lewis for Defendant Intervenors CFS.
And Yang for Ultimina.
Lucas Kittle seated for Defendant Intervenors Ultimina.
Good morning. Please be seated. Okay. Hey, please the court.
Before we start, I just want to make sure. Sure. That we're all on the same page here. I know that you've consulted with Jeff Cole, and my understanding is that the plaintiff will be arguing 20 minutes.
20 minutes.
Right, and the plaintiff intervener, while present, will not be arguing.
That's correct.
Correct. Right. And the defendant, the International Trade Commission, will be arguing for 13 minutes. And the defendant intervener, one attorney will be arguing for the defendant intervener, will be arguing 7 minutes.
I think
that's an alternative, just confirming that.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. and let me say at the outset that, of course, the court has read the pleadings, has reviewed your answers to the questions that were submitted in anticipation of argument. And you would have received yesterday supplemental questions for a further consideration.
That's right. Yeah, we received those and we're ready to answer them, Your Honor.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Neil Reynolds. I represent Cleveland Cliffs, a domestic producer of cold rolled steel. I'm accompanied by my colleague, Mr. Stephen Vaughn, who is the lead attorney for Cleveland Cliffs in this appeal. I'd add that our arguments in the appeal is supported by the three other significant producers of cold rolled steel, Nucor, SDI, and U.S. Steel, although their counsel could not be here today. At the outset, I'd like to thank the court for your questions, which helped clarify and focus the issues that are being raised in the appeal. As I'll discuss in my presentation, the responses of the commission and the defendant interveners to your questions make clear that the commission failed to comply with its fundamental legal obligations under the statute when it chose not to accumulate the Brazilian imports. Accordingly, the court should remand the commission's analysis for reconsideration. I'll be addressing three issues before you today. First, I want to briefly discuss why this appeal is so important to Cleveland Cliffs and other domestic producers who routinely appear before the commission in sunset reviews. Second, I'll address the four questions you sent to us yesterday. And then finally, I'll address and rebut the responses of the commission and the defendant interveners to the questions you issued last week. In their responses, the commission and defendant interveners have repeated many of the same unfounded arguments they've previously made in this appeal. They have, however, failed to establish, as they must, that the commission's conditions of competition analysis for Brazil was legally sound. Given this, the court should remand these findings. Turning to my first point, I want to emphasize that this appeal is not simply about the Commission's decision for Brazil. It involves an important legal issue for domestic producers and their counsel who routinely appear before the Commission in sunset reviews. For the domestic industry, accumulation is a critical aspect of the Commission's sunset decision. Congress has made clear that the accumulation provisions of this statute are intended to allow the Commission to accumulate imports from individual countries that may in fact be small, but that will, on an accumulated basis, have a material adverse impact on the industry. In the sunset reviews below, the Commission majority ignored Congress's instruction that even small volumes of imports can and should be accumulated. Indeed, despite Congress's instructions on this score, the Commission chose not to accumulate the imports from Brazil with the other subject imports, primarily because they were likely to be smaller in volume than the other subject imports. This type of approach is fundamentally inconsistent with the policies underlying the accumulation provisions of the statute. It is in conflict with this court's statements in Nina, Allegheny, and Nucor that the commission may not rely solely on the likely volume of the subject imports as a basis for choosing not to accumulate them. If the court approves this finding below, we are concerned that the commission will interpret your decision as authorizing it to exercise its discretion not to accumulate certain imports based on any differences between the imports, even if they're minor. This possibility is deeply troubling for the domestic producers and their counsel who routinely appear before the commission.
Now, counsel, you may be getting into this later, but what is our standard of review for analyzing the accumulation decision?
Well, I think that there are two aspects of that. I mean, if you the first is, and the most important aspect of this appeal is that you really should be fundamentally analyzing this under Chevron, which is in the second step of Chevron, which is that in a situation where the statute contains ambiguous language, the agency that's allowed to interpret that statute is given deference to its reasonable interpretations of the statute. Here we're really attacking the idea that the commission we're arguing that the commission improperly relied on this volume factor as a sole basis for choosing not to accumulate. In essence, we're saying in this case, the court in Nina, Allegheny, and Nucor all interpreted the statute as saying that that's improper. So that's the primary focus of our arguments here. There are other aspects of our case that do involve substantial evidence, and the question there is whether the commission reasonably weighed the evidence on the record. In our case, we would point out that several of the substantial evidence issues we're raising here, the commission simply failed to address in any reasoned fashion the evidence we support provided.
So your argument is that the commission did not act in accordance with law?
Correct. That's our primary argument here. That is, and in particular, our argument is that the commission did not act in accordance with this court's statements in Nina, Nucor, and Allegheny Ludlow. Okay, now I'd like to turn to your four questions from yesterday, Your Honor. I'll start with your question about the Federal Circuit's decision in Nucor. In Nucor, the Federal Circuit's The Federal Circuit's statements in Nucor about the hammering effects principle do not affect our arguments in this case at all. In Nucor, the Federal Circuit was simply stating that the hammering effects principle may be one policy underlying the commission's accumulation analysis in a sunset review, but there are other policies underlying that analysis as well. This is not in conflict with our arguments here. In this appeal, we're not arguing that the hammering effects principle is the sole policy underlying the commission's accumulation analysis in a sunset review. Nor are we arguing that the commission's determination for Brazil was legally insufficient because it did not comply with the hammering effects principle. Instead, we're arguing the commission's analysis was inconsistent with this court's statements in Nina, Allegheny, and Nucor to the effect that the commission may not rely solely on volumes of the subject imports as the determining factor in exercising its discretion not to accumulate the subject imports. The Federal Circuit's decision in Nucor does not address that concept at all, nor does it question the Commission's discussion of these principles that it was set forth in Nina, Allegheny, and Nucor. Given this, the Circuit's statement in Nucor does not impact our arguments in this case in any manner at all.
So just drilling down for a moment so that I understand your position, as the supplemental question notes, the defendant points to Nucor.
Yep.
As standing for the proposition that there's no support in legislative history for the proposition that the discretionary accumulation provision of 19 U.S.C. Section 1675A7 shared the same congressional purpose as the mandatory accumulation provision in 19 U.S.C. Section 1677-7G.
Yeah.
And I know that you've been responding to that. But can you unpack
I think that the hammering effects principle is a really critical concept in the present injury context, because that's what really guides the whole idea that the commission should accumulate various imports from various countries, because that's the best way of assessing whether those imports impact the industry. So it's a primary factor. It's not the only factor, even in the present injury context. But in this particular context, unlike the present injury context, the Commission has the discretion to choose not to accumulate imports if they are competing with each other in the domestic industry. That is, it can choose not to accumulate imports if they do have some type of hammering effect on the industry. And the reason that that's important is that the exercise of discretion allows the Commission to develop factors that will guide its exercise of discretion that are different than the hammering effects principle. And that's what the Commission has done consistently since it has done the, it's performed its accumulation analysis and sunset reviews. It's developed this idea that it's going to look at the concept of whether there are different conditions of competition for the subject imports from the various countries that cause them to compete in a different fashion in the market. And it looks at the factors, a variety of factors. I want to point out, Your Honor, that we're not challenging that particular legal approach here. We're not saying that that's wrong. We agree that that's a reasonable approach. We don't disagree with the fact that the Commission can look at a variety of factors. Our point is that here, unlike all of the other cases that the Commission cites in its brief, the Commission relied on one single factor, which is the fact that there are likely volumes, differences in likely volumes between Brazil and the other subject countries, as the sole support for its finding that they shouldn't be accumulated with the other subject countries. Okay. Next, I'd like to address your question about the dissent's views, Your Honor. You asked whether the dissent's statement that the Section 232 measures do not constitute a difference in the conditions of competition between the subject imports is consistent with our description of the Commission's prior decisions addressing the Section 232 measures. The dissent's analysis, in our view, is fully consistent with our discussion of the Commission's prior press decisions addressing the Section 232 measures. In their view, the dissent correctly pointed out that the Section 232 measures were not a factor that would lead to the subject imports competing on a different basis in the market. As the dissent pointed out, quote, the differing measures do not affect the types of products that may be sold in the U.S. market, nor do they affect the locations or the channels of distribution through which the imports may be sold. Simply put, any differences in these measures will not result in the imports from different subject countries competing differently in the marketplace. In sum, the dissent made clear that the Commission majority had incorrectly chosen to treat those differences as a difference in the conditions of competition that would affect the volume of imports from Brazil when compared to the other subject countries. This is fully consistent with the point arguments we've been making about the Commission's prior decisions involving 232 measures. In none of those prior decisions did the Commission find that the particular differences in the measures that under Section 232 constituted a difference in the conditions of competition for subject imports that warranted deaccumulation. There were six cases where the Commission addressed a review involving the 232 measures, and in none of those did it find that the measures constituted a different condition of competition. on the contrary, as we noted in our brief, and this is the statements you cite in your question, prior to its decision for Brazil, the Commission had taken a very different approach to the subject imports and had consistently rejected the argument made by the farm producers in those cases that the Section 232 measures would limit their ability to increase their exports to the United States, which indicates to us that they would be competing under similar conditions of competition in the marketplace. Given this, the dissent's finding on that issue, that there were different, the quotas do not constitute different conditions, is fully consistent, in our view, with our discussion of the Commission's prior decisions in those cases.
So the question of whether the quotas constitute different conditions of competition,
yeah,
Is that a matter of law question, or is that a factual question?
To me, Your Honor, I think it's, in some respects, a combination of both. I think, as I said in our response to your questions, there's a point at which a consistent finding becomes so typical of the Commission's analysis that it becomes a legal finding in the Commission. And that's what happens in this case. In these cases, in every single case, the Commission had not found that there are different conditions of competition, and yet had found instead that they wouldn't prevent imports from coming into the marketplace. There's a point at which when the Commission makes a similar finding for a similar set of facts, that analysis becomes, in effect, a statement by the Commission of its legal approach to those issues.
Right. And so this also gets into question three, which is the general legal principle issue. What is your home run case?
What is my what?
Your home run case.
My home run case. I think my home run cases, Your Honor, are actually court cases, which are the Nina case, the Allegheny-Loveland case, the Newkirk case.
You just made the point that there is a point in which determinations, albeit arising from factual patterns, lead to such a uniformity in the approach of the Commission.
Yeah.
That they should be considered general legal principles.
Your Honor, I think the answer to that is that I guess what I'd do is I'd point out to you that in several of those cases, Mr. Vaughn and I were actually involved in them, and they tend to be the later cases. And I think for me, the home run case was the corrosion decision case, where at that point, that was the fifth in the line of cases in which the Commission said the Section 232 duties won't stop people from being interested in this market, coming into the market, and competing for sales with the U.S. industry. Mm-hmm. And to me, because I was directly involved in that case, that was right before the Commission's decision in Cold-Rolled, mm-hmm. I thought that that cinched and really clarified the approach that the Commission was taking. As a matter of fact, in those cases, in the case corrosion-resistant steel, Mr. Vaughn and I consistently made arguments, you've done the same thing on these measures in every single case you've looked at, you should do the same thing here.
So can you remind me the posture of those determination? Was there a dissent?
No, there wasn't.
No. It was a unanimous.
It was a unanimous decision.
By the Commission.
And if I'm not mistaken, I don't want to overstate this, but I think that the Commission was unanimously approaching this particular issue in all the cases we're citing. I don't think that there wasn't a statement by any of the commissioners saying they disagreed fundamentally with the legal or the principle or analytical approach being taken with respect to these measures in any of those cases.
So is it your view that if we were to, do a graphic or sort of put up on the on the post, the Commission's determinations in those other cases,
mm-hmm.
That they would directly substantiate your view as to what the law is.
Yes.
And that we would see a marked differentiation as we consider this case.
Right. I think that there is, in all those cases you had, especially cases like the corrosion-resistant steel case, you had imports with a range of volume levels and a range of market share levels. And I think what that shows is the Commission was sitting there and saying, we're not going to simply look solely at the volumes. We're not going to do that because that's not that meaningful to us once we've gotten past the discernible adverse impact analysis, which does allow them to look at volume. And I think that our take on this and our understanding at that point in time was that the Commission had said, we're really not going to pay much attention to the quote-unquote limiting effect of the subject imports, which is a big argument the respondents had consistently made in these cases. It rejected it. And that was why we were so surprised to find the Commission placing such great emphasis on the volumes of the Brazilian imports that resulted from the quotas. And I think it was, for me, it was particularly troubling because as soon as I saw that analysis, I had been at the commission for 20 years, I immediately said that's a circular analysis. That is the commission taking a factor that belongs properly in the likely injury analysis and putting it into accumulation, even though this court going all the way back to USX has said you shouldn't be doing that. You shouldn't be putting likely injury analysis, including volume analysis or price analysis, into your findings for accumulation in either an investigation or a sunset review. So I was really shocked to see that. I think, so I'll move on. You're also asking why we believe that the Commission's prior findings, actually, I think we've just discussed that, so I'll move on from that. Finally, you asked us to respond to the Commission's claim, Your Honor, that the Commission's analysis of the quotas on the Brazilian and Caribbean imports was a comparison of import ceilings, not likely volumes. That's a quote from their comments, their response to your answers. The Commission's claim is simply wrong. In this regard, I'd simply note that the Commission's analysis doesn't simply reflect and rely on a comparison of the different quotas. Instead, it reflects a comparison of likely volumes for these imports because the ceilings imposed on those imports under the quotas act as a cap on their volumes. Importantly, in the analysis and the discussion of the quotas, the Commission majority specifically notes when it discusses the difference between the two quotas, specifically notes the volume limits set forth in the quotas, which were 57 short tons for Brazil and 141,000 short tons for Korea, then goes on to explain that the Korean quota is three times larger than the Brazilian quota, and then concludes that this means that volumes of the Korean imports would be much larger than the volumes of the subject imports after revocation. The Commission's discussion of the differences in those measures is directly and inextricably linked to a conclusion that there is going to be a difference in the volumes for the subject for the imports from Korea and the imports from Brazil. Given that, that's obviously a comparison of the likely volume differences in the volumes of the levels of imports for the two countries. The Commission's claim that this analysis reflects only an assessment of the differences in the measures is unfounded. Next, I'd like to turn to our comments and the responses made by the Commission.
Right.
Have I addressed all your questions?
Yes, thank you. I think time is up.
Oh, is it up?
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yes.
I've spent a lot of this discussing the four questions you had, which I think is your focus.
Right.
I think the one thing, if I might add, take a minute to make one final
right.
comment.
We will,
I can make it up.
Give the other side, an equal amount of time. So you're in the midst of your a few things you want to say. We'll give you.
I think what I want to say is one thing, which is I want to address this issue that the Commission has raised in its brief, where it says that it is not required to provide an explanation of the reasoning that it found, the reasons that it found that the subject quotas on Brazil and Korea would not lead to a difference in competition, when they specifically know that there are differences in the production and export levels for Korea and Brazil. We pointed out that they hadn't actually explained how those differences relate to their conclusion that there are going to be different conditions of competition in the market for both sets of imports. Their response was simply that they don't need to make that argument, they don't need to explain that. Well, the problem with that is that's one of the most fundamental obligations that the Commission has under the statute. As you know, and we pointed out to you in a long line of cases, this Court's held that the Commission must provide a reasoned explanation of its findings supported by a stated connection between the facts found and the choices made. That is what the commission needs to do under the statute, and yet it didn't do so. And I think that failure and the commission's admission that it didn't have to do that and didn't do that here is so fundamental. It's such an important admission of error by the commission that it, in and of itself, warrants remand here. I'll sit down here.
Thanks, counsel. So, Mr. Gold, we will allot... Yes, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the court, John Henderson for the defendant, U.S. International Trade Commission. The commission's determination here was in accordance with law and fulfilled, followed congressional intent, as we've outlined in the statute and in the SAA. The commission may accumulate. Accumulation is discretionary. This is a different statute from the statute for mandatory accumulation. And the commission's determination not to exercise its discretion to accumulate subject imports from Brazil was supported by substantial evidence, basically, largely, not entirely, undisputed. It was fully explained by the commission, as I'll mention in a moment. It was not a circular analysis and was consistent with numerous decisions by this court and by the Federal Circuit and Nucor. The commission did not rely on likely volumes or a small volume of for subject imports from Brazil. It relied on a comparison of various factors, primarily trade-restricting measures under Section 232. And I heard counsel say that the commission made a finding that subject imports from South Korea from Brazil would likely be smaller than subject imports from South Korea. And I don't see that finding at all. The commission analyzed the differences in the trade restricting measures. The commission, explained the differences in other factors. And the commission's conclusion is that because of these differences, subject imports from Brazil, and in particular, the individual producers from Brazil would be in a position to compete would not be in a position to compete for the larger volumes of imports that subject producers from all five other subject countries, including South Korea, would be in a position to compete for. So this is something that affects how individual producers from Brazil would compete and therefore would affect how subject imports in general from Brazil would be able to compete. And that's different from how subject imports from the other five countries who were either, or four of them, not subject to the hard cap, or with respect to South Korea, were subject to a much larger hard cap. So the commission explained its finding that they were likely to compete under different differences in conditions and competition. And this was not a circular analysis. The commission did not make findings about what the likely volumes of imports were with respect to any of these countries. It explained that Brazil had a much lower hard quota than subject imports from South Korea, and that the other four countries had different kinds of trade restrictions, but no hard caps. So the commission considered and compared the trade restricting measures and explained how that would result in subject imports from Brazil, including the individual Brazilian producers, competing under different conditions of competition. It did not rely on any finding as to what the likely volume of subject imports from Brazil is. It didn't make such a finding, and it's just not there.
So, just that I'm clear, you just heard your counsel argue that the commission erred in its basically reliance on only one factor in its analysis. You disagree with that?
Well, the commission, as we explained, and it's undisputed, can rely on a wide variety of factors, and it depends on what the factor shows. There isn't some rule, that the commission must rely on multiple factors. If one factor alone, and in this case, a difference in trade-restricting measures, establishes that the imports are likely to compete under different conditions of competition, and the Commission reasonably finds that based on substantial evidence, et cetera, then that's not an error of law to rely on that factor that supports the conclusion that they're going to compete under different conditions of competition. Now, with respect to South Korea, the Commission considered other factors. But in terms of the court's question about the consideration of Section 232 measures before, now, as the court correctly observed, the couple of cases we cite in which the CIT had upheld the Commission's consideration of trade-restricting measures, those were different types, and one of them involved difference in uranium suspension agreements. The other one, Nucor, involved differences in foreign trade-restricting measures. But the Commission noted specifically in its views, looking at the public version, page 41 to 42 of the views, footnote 298, the Commission notes that prior Commission decisions in five-year reviews and identifying trade-restricting measures as a relevant condition of competition, and that they therefore find the absolute quota on imports from Brazil is a relevant likely condition of competition affecting their ability to supply and compete in the U.S. market. And the Commission specifically cites and refers to a cut-to-length carbon steel plate investigation from 2003, where the Commission had declined to exercise its discretion to accumulate subject imports from South Africa because of South Africa's exemption from President Bush's Section 201 safeguard measure. So the Commission is saying that in the past we have sometimes looked at trade-restricting measures and declined to accumulate based on that basis. And now, of course, we know that the Section 232 measures, in this case, there may have been 232 measures back in the 1980s, but were in 2018 there were the steel, aluminum, et cetera, measures. So this was something the Commission has had to deal with since then, and obviously had several cases. And we pointed out in our response to questions that there's at least one case, stainless steel bar, prior to this, in which the Commission did not accumulate subject imports from Brazil. It was a case of finding no discernible adverse impact from those imports. But so there isn't some general, any kind of practice you can determine or any legal principle that says the Commission must accumulate regardless of any Section 232 measures. And we've pointed out that in two subsequent Commission decisions, after the incident case, the Commission likewise declined to accumulate subject imports from Brazil, partly in light of the Section 232 trade restrictions, the differences.
So if we can return for a moment to, again, the impact of prior Commission determinations involving Section 232. And you've heard counsel say that, he was shocked by the Commission's determination here, given prior cases, as he's characterized them, that Section 232 trade restrictions were unlikely to prevent unfairly traded imports from entering the domestic market in a manner that would impact the industry. So does that suggest a general legal, you indicate that does not suggest a general legal principle?
No, and we tried to detail this in our response to the questions, that there's as plaintiffs acknowledge, there was one, of the few prior Section 232 investigations, there was one that the Commission did not accumulate imports from Brazil, every case differs according to which subject countries and what the product is, et cetera, what the other likely conditions of competition. And In this case, notwithstanding the Section 232 measure on imports from South Korea, the Commission did accumulate imports from South Korea with the other subject countries. So the fact that in another case the Commission may have accumulated imports from South Korea, there's not a departure there. There's not. It depends on each case, on the product, the countries, the arguments the Commission has to consider, and every review is different, and the products are different, the industries are different, the subject countries are different, and in the short period of time in which the Commission has had to address these 2018 Section 232 measures, there is no established practice, no general idea or concept that the Commission, for the Commission to even deviate from. And as we pointed out, there are several subsequent cases in which the Commission has likewise declined to accumulate subject imports from Brazil, but based on the facts and the record in those particular reviews. And responding to the court's, whether it was question one, about the plaintiff's contention that the ITC's discretion is limited by the purpose of the statute to prevent the hammering effect. Now, I think now at least we have counsel agreeing that the hammering effect is not the sole purpose of the statute, as the Federal Circuit said in Nucor. The hammering effect is definitely a relevant consideration, but as the Federal Circuit said, it's not the only rationale. And so we disagree to the extent they're still contending that the invocation of the hammering effect limits the Commission's discretion to appropriately consider relevant conditions of competition, and when it finds that industries are competing under different, or subject countries are competing, or likely different conditions of competition, then the Commission can decline to accumulate those subject imports. Now, responding to several of the Commission or the plaintiff's responses to the court's questions, we dispute the concept that circularity prevents the Commission from considering factors that may be relevant to the Commission's likely volume analysis. While there was language in the Nina Foundry case, many, many cases, I think including the cases the plaintiffs rely on, the Commission has considered factors relevant to likely volume. I mean, it cannot make a completely circular analysis and say because we find no injury from imports from that subject country, therefore we're going to decline to accumulate them. But the Commission has been upheld in considering factors relevant to likely volume. And I would note that plaintiff's response to the court's question number two, which had to do with their assertions about possible unused or excess capacity in the Brazilian industry, well, and they are suggesting that the Commission should have considered this in its likely conditions of competition analysis as to Brazil. Well, unused capacity is a statutory factor in the Commission's likely volume analysis. And so that is an inconsistent position to say that you may not consider things that are relevant to your likely volume analysis in your, but nevertheless, this particular factor the Commission erred in not considering in its conditions of competition analysis. So that's just an inconsistent position. And as I said, we find that, or while there's much, there is no actual holding of any of these cases, the three cases the plaintiffs rely on, finding that anything the Commission did in particular violated the circularity principle. And so, we all agree that, that we can do the case about the Commission cannot decline to accumulate because of ultimately making a negative injury finding, but it can consider relevant factors, including factors relevant to likely volume. And here the Commission did consider these factors. It did not make any findings about likely volume. You can look there, and they're not there.
So I'm just on circularity. There is nothing in any statute that directly addresses circularity or speaks to it.
Not that I'm aware of.
Just wanted to confirm that. Yeah.
Is my time up?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
May it please the Court, Your Honor. My name is Mike Jacobson of Hogan Lovells, representing Defendant Intervenor CSN. I'm here along with my colleague Craig Lewis, and as well Leanne Yang and Lucas Karras-Perez of Alston & Byrd, also representing Defendant Intervenors, their client, Usiminas. We endorse the position of the International Trade Commission in this case. The Commission has not committed legal error by exercising its discretion not to accumulate imports from Brazil. Let's start first with the discretion in this case. The Commission exercised its discretion not to accumulate imports in many, many other cases. In fact, this Court has heard several cases on this issue and has never remanded in the history of this Court the issue of the Commission's discretion to choose not to accumulate. And there's good reason for that. The statute provides the Commission very broad authority to choose whether to accumulate or not to accumulate. In fact, the statute says whether to accumulate. So there's no automatic position of accumulation or decumulation. It's at the Commission's discretion. This fits well within the Chevron deference principle, and Your Honor asked about Chevron deference versus Skidmore deference. And we agree with opposing counsel that Chevron deference applies and has applied in every other case that this Court has looked at, as well as in the Federal Circuit case in Nucor, where the Nucor Court applied to this very issue, Chevron deference step two, saying that the deferring to the Commission's determination, interpreting what, you know, what it means, the rubric by which it means to not accumulate imports in that case. So we don't think that Skidmore deference applies here. Turning to the substantive issues in this case, the key one here is circularity. And there's a fundamental disagreement about what circularity means. I'd like to address the other side's arguments about what it means to be circular and discuss what the cases before this Court, Nina, Allegheny, and Nucor are actually saying about the circularity principle. And start with, there's nothing about circularity in statute. So this is merely something that the courts have looked at under, you know, in cases. So the main problem with plaintiff's argument is they ask this Court to apply an overbroad principle of what is unlawful circularity. What circularity really is if there's a material injury finding, and then the Commission were to refer simply back to that material injury finding and saying that's why we accumulate. And that's not at all what happened here. In fact, in all three of the cases that plaintiffs relied upon, they looked at volume factors as one factor. But the key here is each of the courts explained the principle for how circularity can be avoided. And there's effectively two ways to do that. The first way is if the same factor is being used for different purposes. And the court asked about the USX case, which was before censorship reviews were put into law. But of course, the USX case back in the 1980s looked at circularity. And that case is striking because it's quite different, the Commission's determination in that case, than in the case before us. In that case, the Commission did an entire material injury analysis, and then summarily in one sentence said, and therefore we're not going to accumulate. And the court ultimately, upon remand, even affirmed that decision is within the Commission's discretion to choose not to accumulate imports in that case. And that's not all at all what we have here. What we have here instead is the Commission going through a well-reasoned and several-page analysis of comparing imports from Brazil with other sources of imports, and then determining to use its discretion not to accumulate those imports. And then the Commission went on to look at material injury factors in the foreseeable future and looked at volume and price and impact and several factors, and then determined that Brazil on its own basis, not compared to the other countries, but Brazil on its own basis was not likely to cause injury in the foreseeable future to the domestic industry. This is the Commission looking at the volume factors for different purposes, and in this case as well, looking at trade restrictive measures for different purposes. In the first instance, Brazil has a different kind of trade restrictive measure with four of the other countries and a much smaller trade restrictive measure than compared with Korea. And then in the second instance, looking at Brazil's trade restrictive measure and determining whether there might be injury in the future. Those are different purposes. In addition, as the other side acknowledges, if there's multiple factors that the Commission is looking at, then there's no circularity problem either. And that's exactly what happened in this case. The Commission looked at several different factors. It looked at the Section 232 measures, several different Section 232 measures, to distinguish them between each other. The Commission looked at prior imports and the very, very small quantity of imports coming from Brazil. The Commission also looked at Brazilian export orientation, compared that with Korean export orientation, finding that Brazilian export orientation was much lower, and there's a much bigger focus on the home market. And then also looked at the likely future volumes of exports coming from different countries. So there's several factors here that the Commission looked at to make its comparison and make its findings on accumulation.
So this also ties back to the second supplemental question. And I just would ask you to sort of refocus on that question, which is the points to the polyethylene retail carrier bags from China, Malaysia, and Thailand.
Yes, Your Honor, I'll address that case.
Yeah.
So in that case, in a footnote, the Commission discussed the circularity principle. And I actually think it's useful to look at the entire footnote what the Commission said, because it actually explains the circularity principle exactly the way I'm explaining it right now. And there it talked about the Commission can't engage in a circular analysis and perform its sunset analysis backwards. So it's speaking about doing material injury first and then accumulation. It said that's prohibited, which we've discussed. And then it went on to say, under the statute, however, the Commission must consider the issue of accumulation first before considering the likelihood test. So in that case, the Commission has done exactly what we've asked the court to apply here, which is true circularity, as it really means, is doing injury first and then referring back and saying, well, that's why we are choosing to accumulate or not to accumulate. And that's not what the court, that's not what the Commission did in this case. Last point on accumulation, and then I want to turn briefly to the 232 issues and the different measures. So the Allegheny Court, I think, explains this issue. I see my time is – well, I'll focus on this last point and happy to answer questions on 232 as they come up. The Allegheny Court explains this issue really well, and this court could apply the same principle that the Allegheny Court explains. It says the Commission did not consider identical factors, in making the two determinations, and where there was an overlap in the trend analysis used, the ITC utilized the information for different purposes in accordance with NINA. And that's exactly what we're asking the court to do here. I see my time has expired. To the extent of the rebuttal, I'm happy to answer questions on the 232 issue at that point.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
As we are all gathered here in the courtroom, I will allow each side 4 minutes to address what you've heard or anything else that you want to say. I will also, as is my custom, permit the parties to file a supplemental submission of not more than 1,250 words. You don't have to file such a submission, but it gives you an opportunity. And it would be due on November, a week from today, November 16th. Let's make it the 20th, November 20th.
Even better, Your
Honor.
Sorry? I said even better, Your Honor.
Yes, okay. Yeah. Mr. Reynolds.
Again, Neil Reynolds for Cleveland Cliffs, and I appreciate the time you've given me, Your Honor. I think I can
say what I want to say in 4 minutes. Let me start by saying I think it's great that both sides now agree that circularity is a principle that drives the Commission's analysis in accumulation decision in a sunset. We heard a little bit in the brief that circularity was a dubious principle. I think we now understand that even the defendant interveners concede that circularity is an important point. So I think the issue here for you is, and this is the critical focus of our brief, is whether the Commission conducted a impermissible circular analysis when it relied solely on volumes for when comparing Brazil to the other subject imports. That's the key issue here. And as we've said in our briefs, the Commission did conduct such a circular analysis. And the reason we think that is because the court in Nina, Allegheny, and Nucor made clear that if you rely solely on volumes when you're doing your conditions of competition analysis, that renders your decision, the Commission's decision, circular. I want to talk a little bit about some of the other points that were made by the Commission. First, Mr. Henderson, who's a good friend of mine, by the way, said that there was no finding in the Commission's decision that says the subject imports would be from Brazil would be smaller than the other countries, including Korea. That is just not true. Let me read you. Given the, on page 43 of the Commission's public decision, says, given the absolute quota applicable to subject imports from Brazil, even if imports from Brazil reach that level, the substantially larger quota for South Korea and the absence of any absolute quota on imports from other subject countries means that unlike subject imports from Brazil, subject imports from other countries are in a position to compete for much larger volumes of sales than any of the subject producers in Brazil. That is literally a comparison of the volumes of the subject countries, the other subject countries, and the volumes from Brazil. So I don't think there's any basis for that. Secondly, Mr. Henderson said there's not a rule that the Commission must rely on a variety of factors when it performs its difference of competition, its conditions of competition analysis. Our point is that whether or not it relies on a variety of factors, the court in Nina, Allegheny, and Nucor has said there's one thing it can't do. It can't rely on volume as the primary and sole determining factor in its analysis. And that's what the Commission did here. It did it very clearly in its analysis for the Brazil, comparing the Brazilian imports to the imports from China, India, Japan, and the UK. That's absolutely incontrovertible. If you look at the decision and the analysis on page 42, which I urge you to do, I know you've already looked at that, I know your clerk has, you'll see that that's absolutely incontrovertible and warrants remand. Now, I want to point out, they cite, Mr. Henderson, I believe, cited to footnote 298 where it says that the Commission enjoys wide latitude in choosing factors and has a lot of discretion to pick the factors. We're not debating that. That's true. But we will point out that that footnote cites Nucor, which is the one of the three primary cases we rely on. So that doesn't help them much here. And that footnote, when they address it, I think it doesn't basically tell the Commission that it can simply cite to factors, explain that there are differences in them, and then go on not to explain why those differences matter. On Chevron deference, my last point, Your Honor. Should I sit down?
Oh, you can finish the sentence.
Okay.
Yeah.
I just want to point out that Chevron deference, you had a question, and it seemed to imply that Chevron deference might sort of provide an additional support for what the Commission did here. What I'd point out is that in the cases in Nina and in Allegheny, the court really made clear that its development, its discussion about this, and its discussion of the principles underlying the accumulation decision and the exercise of discretion derived directly from the second step of the Chevron analysis. So there's no need to read.
And can I just ask one question? Because I'm thinking of the movie Casablanca. You used the word shocked.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
I see.
Now,
I wasn't saying it the way the inspector, the French inspector, said it there.
Right.
I was trying not to be cynical.
Right. So, you've heard counsel explain why there's, in a way that there's no reason that you should have been shocked. In fact, he's shocked that you were shocked.
Yes, exactly.
Can you just address that?
Yeah. I think it's, I'm going to just stay with what I had said earlier, which is at that point when we had gotten to this case, which occurred right after the corrosion resistance steel case, there had been a very consistent line of cases from our perspective, many of which we have participated in which the commission brushed aside the arguments by the parties, the respondent parties, that the Section 232 would somehow limit them to discernible volumes or made a big difference in, you know, the conditions of competition. It brushed them aside. It said it wasn't true. And it made a finding that in fact, they wouldn't stop the imports from coming into the market in a way that would impact the industry. And I think I'll stay with that. I don't think they've said anything different. There is not a case out there that says something different than that.
Thank you, counsel.
You're welcome.
And also referencing Casablanca and your friendship with Mr. Henderson.
What's that, sir?
Referencing Casablanca and your friendship with Mr. Henderson. I find it the line, Louis, yes. This could be the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Well, this isn't the beginning. We've had a very long-standing friendship, and it's a friendship I value very much, the same way as with much of these people that I've been friends with for a long time. So thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel.
We appreciate your listening to our argument.
Of course. Thank you.
And the questions were excellent.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Henderson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Just a couple of points. First, the counsel, my good, longstanding friend, Mr. Reynolds, interprets the language we've both been quoting in a very different way. It does not contain any estimate of likely volumes from any of the subject countries. It talks about what volumes of sales they are in a position to compete for. Now, that's not the same as saying that this country's volume of sales would be higher or lower than this one. We know because of the hard cap on imports from Brazil that overall, you know, the Brazil imports are subject to that cap. But what the commission is saying is that in terms of competing for sales, this affects individual Brazilian producers who are all operating under that cap, and they are competing in a different way than producers from these other subject countries who are not subject to that cap. That's not making any statement about, you know, competing or comparing likely volumes from any of the countries. It is talking about how subject producers in the different countries will compete for sales. For higher volumes, Brazilian producers are, you know, constrained, and it's going to affect how they're going to compete in a different way from producers from other subject countries. And in terms of the question of how many factors does the commission have to consider, well, as I say, it's sort of a substantial evidence question. If the commission finds a factor that is relevant, it considers that, and that factor, then the analysis supports the conclusion based on substantial evidence that that subject imports from one country are not likely to compete in a similar way through imports from another country, the commission can make that finding. It isn't a question of how many factors, as it has to juggle factors. The commission has to make its determination supported by its analysis of relevant factor or factors, and there isn't some magic number of factors that the commission has to consider or support with. It's a question of whether its determination is supported by substantial evidence and explained by the commission. And here we submit the commission did that. And we request the court to affirm our determination in all respects. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Lewis.
Your Honor, Mike Jacobson for defendant interveners. Just 2 points on rebuttal. First, on what the commission actually said in its determination. So As my co-counsel stated, my colleague, the commission discussed how the hard quota on Brazil, very hard quota, a maximum of 0.2% of the markets, we're talking a very tiny quota, nearly a ban, capped imports in a way that changed how Brazilian producers, and used language Brazilian producers, where there are several of them, have the ability to compete in the U.S. market. And the commission, later in its determination, goes on to explain what it means a little bit more. And in that part of the accumulation section, it footnotes the Brazilian producers' questionnaire responses, where they explain some of these factors, and then later explains it by citing to several points in the record where we, on behalf of our clients, explained, and our clients explained in the hearing itself, that Brazilian producers could not compete for large value contracts and resorted to selling very small volumes for higher value products. So now you have a trade restrictive measure that is impacting the way that producers are able to compete on the market. That's at least two factors I can count amongst the several other that we've discussed that where the commission looked at on accumulation. Last point, and I promised I would get back to it very briefly at the end, is the Section 232 measures and whether there's some sort of a precedential practice that the commission has developed over the course of the last 5 years since those measures were put into place. And of course, there's not. This can't be right on a number of different reasons. First of all, the court in Allegheny explained that sunset reviews are, quote, considered of limited precedential value. And there's good reason for that because of the level of discretion that the commission is afforded under the statute in sunset reviews. So the idea that there would be some sort of precedent on 232 measures in general since they were first instituted in 2018 doesn't make sense. In terms of the actual 232 measures here, we're only aware of five cases involving 232 measures on Brazil and on quotas from Brazil. And in each one of those measures, you're dealing with different products, with different quota levels, and different other market factors that are at play there. And in fact, in those four cases, in one case, the commission used its discretion to accumulate. That's the steel wire rod case. And then in four other cases, the commission used its discretion not to accumulate. The stainless steel bar case, the case before us on cold rolled, and then subsequent cases on hot rolled steel and cut-to-length steel plate. So there's certainly no precedent, but at least in the case of Brazil, the commission appears to be choosing not to accumulate on the basis of very small quotas from Brazil and other factors in those cases. And I'll note in the steel wire rod case, imports from Brazil were much higher, much larger percentage of the market than they are here, which shows the commission is going through a sui generis analysis and determining each case on its merits on the basis of each individual case.
So it's your position that there can never be a general practice with respect to this issue?
With respect to this issue, yes. I won't say that there can never be a general practice at all, but certainly with respect to the commission's discretion, the fact that this court has explained that there's limited precedential value for sunset review determinations in general, and certainly the fact that it's only been 5 years since Section 232 measures have been put into place, and there's all different measures, different quota levels. You know, perhaps if the commission were to come back and look at this exact same quota level and there was exact same market factors, there'd be good reasons for why the commission might choose not to accumulate again. But I wouldn't say that there's a precedent that can be.
But the analysis might be different if we were not talking about sunset reviews.
It's possible that it could be, Your Honor, but that's not the case before us today. I'm focused here just on sunset reviews. I would say also threat determinations are in the same boat because they're also predictive, just like sunset reviews. So for these reasons, we ask the court to affirm the commission's findings and dismiss this case. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jacobson. That concludes our arguments. The court would like to thank the parties for their enlightening submissions, their enlightening arguments, and we look forward to any submissions by November 20th. Due on November 20th is not more than 1,250 words, and wish you safe travels and a good Thanksgiving.
Thank you. All right. Court stands adjourned. Thanks.